Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Dot Waterhouse, and I'm your facilitator for this session. And this session is mobile phone design with David Bortello. So I'd like you to welcome David. And at the end of the session, if there's time for questions, I will be passing around the mic. So make sure that you are talking to the mic, because we're podcasting all of the sessions today. So if you'd like to welcome David today.
Thank you very much. The title of this presentation may lead you to believe that we're going to design mobile phones. We're not. It also may lead you to believe that we're just looking at design for mobile phones. We're not. In fact, the title mobile phone design wasn't quite the title that I had initially. More designing for mobile learning. And someone once said, in fact, not that long ago, that all learning is mobile. And in fact, when we're saying mobile learning, we tend to think of mobile phones. But we learn everywhere. I spent most of today mobile. I drove into here, spent $12 to park for 20 minutes downstairs, registered, drove across to work, left the car, got on a train, caught the train into Town Hall, caught the bus to see my kids' speech day at the Seymour Centre, and then got a bus from there back to here. And all the way I was learning. I was seeing people doing things. I came up with great ideas. I made notes. I saw people studying. So to me, that's what mobile learning is about. And it encompasses e-learning, it encompasses distance learning, it encompasses classroom learning, it encompasses mobile phones and iPods and all of those tools. So the true title of this is e-learning for business and mobile, case studies with Sakai Content Management System and Flashlight for mobile. What I was asked to do was to show some of the stuff that we've been doing in Northern Sydney Institute on the Sakai Learning Management System, which is, I guess, the equivalent of Moodle. In particular, one commercial site that where we used Flash sitting on top of the infrastructure of the content management system. And also a course that we ran for students this semester called Phone Technologies, which looked at the mobile phone as a technology and how students might create content for that, and also in a way of how we might create content for that. So we'll have a bit of a look at that. And then I got an email saying, look, we're at this conference in Melbourne and people are learning about stuff for phones. Would it be really good if you could show us how to make something for a phone? And so I thought we'd also look at Flash Lite for mobile, which most of you may actually have on a computer, and you may not be aware of it if you've got the Adobe suite on your computers. And if you can make content in Flash, which might be a simple animation or a sophisticated interactive, you can generally port it onto a mobile phone, assuming that you get the design right. So that's what we're going to look at. So I will start with this magic button. Okay, so what I'm going to talk about today is a little bit about the Sakai Content Management System, which is the platform that we use at Northern Sydney Institute. Does anyone else use that as a platform? Well, how many people use Moodle as a platform? Okay, so I better go now. I think they're direct competitors. Anyway, we use Sakai, and funnily enough, it's named after Iron Chef Sakai, because the original program was called Chef. So the guy on the left, the French Iron Chef, is Iron Chef Sakai. That's where the name Sakai comes from. Not that that's particularly relevant, but this is some examples of stuff that the interface, where when students at Northern Sydney Institute come to log on to our online management system, they see the screen on the left, and a typical course. I'll show you as much as I can here because the internet started to get really slow, and just in case it doesn't work. A typical course consists of a header bar with tabs where they've got their own workspace, but each module or course is called a site. And here's a particular site with all the links down the left-hand side. They also have their own workspace with configurable calendars, blogs and things like that. Most of them never ever use that workspace. Most of them go straight into the courses. I'm also going to talk about a commercial course that we sat on Sakai. If you can remember the interface I just showed you, that's the Sakai interface. We developed something in Flash that actually ended up being totally in Flash. I'll just keep turning my head to this. Totally in Flash, but sitting on the Sakai system for infrastructure and management. So we could log users, see how much time people were spending on it, let them send emails and stuff like that, have blogs. So we'll talk about that as well. I'm happy to show you a little bit of that. And I might even slip in another course that I'm working on at the moment that takes that a step further. Kim Reshepkin, is that how I pronounce it? A bit earlier talked about the toolbox model, how you have a completely self-contained thing that often doesn't work because content changes really rapidly and people want to take bits of it. And this is sort of an example of that in a way. Each double page spread in there is a separate flash file, so it's reasonably easy to change. We've taken it a step further with the next model, where we've got an interactive book, all the content is just in a text file, so it actually pulls it in dynamically. So you can actually put any course into this particular design without having to redesign the design, if that makes sense. And then there's the Phone Technologies course, which is the one we ran for digital media students at Northern Sydney Institute that took them through some of the issues to do with designing for mobile phones. That I teach digital media at Northern Sydney Institute, so our students generally are fairly computer savvy. And shamefully, we've only just started looking at mobile phones as a platform away from the computer screen. In that course, we talk about things like the different mobile phone operating systems, where they might design apps, where those apps might sit in respect to the phone. In this example, the phone itself is at the bottom. You've got embedded hardware just above that. And then you've got your popular operating systems, Symbian, which is most of the Nokia phones, Android, the HTC type phones, the Google phone, and the iPhone operating system. And there's a number of others, but they're the three main players, I guess. Just before I go on, how many people would have an iPhone in this room? Yep. An Android? And a Symbian, which is a Nokia like me, with all the buttons on. Okay, in America at the moment, Android has overtaken iPhone as an operating system. So it looks like, you know, in the next few years, there's going to be quite a lot of competition between those two, because they've both got the sexy sort of app sort of model going. And then we look at the fact that the apps can sit on top of the operating system, written in maybe a native language like Java, or you could have a development platform that sits on top of that, which might be Flash Lite, which I'll talk a little bit about today. Or for Nokia, you might have Qt, or Web Runtime, which is WRT, or Web Pages. So if the mobile phone can browse the web, then you'll be looking at Web Pages within that mobile phone screen. And then in that Phone Technologies course, I'm still talking about what I'm going to talk about. In that Phone Technologies course, we talk about the steps to distribution, if you like, of an app, if they want to take it further. So, for example, with Apple, they'd register, they'd download the software development kit onto their Macintosh, they'd start developing using that, they'd test it in an emulator, which is just a fake phone on the computer. When they're happy with it, they'd try and put it onto a phone, see if that works. When they're really happy and if they've fulfilled all their sort of legal obligations with Apple and error-free, they upload it to iTunes or Nokia's equivalent, the Ovi store, and then they would distribute to people's phones. You could log onto the iTunes store or log onto the Ovi store and get it onto your phone and sell it and make lots of money. When I did this, Android was still quite a way below the iPhone, but really there should be the marketplace that Android they have, so there's the marketplace as well, so you upload it to the marketplace and they distribute it for you as well. And also in the Phone Technologies course we looked at a language called Mobile Processing, which is Java based, but it's actually designed, it's a version of a language called Processing, which is designed for artists to create a lot of interactive stuff on computers. So it's a fairly powerful but lightweight language, fairly easy to use, and we had them developing very simple things on the computer screen. But then they tested in an emulator and then we could Bluetooth it across to the phone. So if you've got Bluetooth on your computer and Bluetooth on your phone, you can send these things across and have them on your phone and impress your friends. Also in that course, it was a very, very comprehensive course. We had a full day a week. The students engaged in a development exercise trying to lead towards developing an interface for a mobile phone application. I was studying a Master's in Interaction Design at the time and it sort of fitted in really well with the research I was doing. So we went right through from defining an initial problem through to ending up with some sort of an interface. I'll show a couple of short videos on that too. And then I've got a simple game in Flash, and I'll just show you the process of getting it onto the mobile via Adobe Device Central. I think now I'm ready to start. Okay, so I'll start with Sakai. Let's check how it's going to work. Okay, this is Sakai. And I won't spend a lot of time on Sakai itself, but Sakai basically allows you to have individual courses that students can become members of, and if they're members of them, they get included within the system. And I haven't really seen Moodle, so I don't know how it would compare with that. And once they've found a course, if it's one that they're doing, they click it, and if they're not enrolled in it, it won't be visible. If they click on it, then they can hopefully go to the site. They're called sites. Every course is called a site. And in the default model that we use, all the navigation's down the middle. And that is really bad, as far as I'm concerned, navigation design for education. So in all the courses I'm involved in, we've pulled it out of the middle and put it down the left-hand side by doing a bit of cheating around the system. So these are all web links, basically, but they just link to different pages within this particular site. So the idea of Sakai, which is very slow at the moment, is you can have your normal sort of, you know, click on content. And the good thing about this, I suppose, was that because it's web-based and we were teaching web courses, we could actually put in interactive content that people could actually try and test things out. So that was a sort of our advantage of having something like this. So they look at one course, they go down, they might look at another course. There's a whole lot of ones there. The phone technologies course is one course that we put on there, and another one that we worked on was called Small Biz, Online Small Biz. And Oz Industry, I think late last year, was offering funding for educational institutions to try and encourage small businesses to get online and to get into the sort of the new age of the online way of dealing in business. And Northern Sydney Institute got some money to develop that program, which is running at the moment. And as part of that program, we've got an online tutorial, which we decided to do in Flash, and we incorporated into the Sakai system as free tutorials. So anyone with an ABN can actually join it and see it. And it is it's broken up into 5 or 6 separate modules in a sort of a book format. It starts in HTML. There's a little intro that plays. I'm not sure we'll actually. So they come into it, they've got their little animated introduction, and if they click, we'll sort of move on from that, and they get the home page, which is, as you can see, through the slow internet, downloading quite slowly. So what I might do, I've got a version of it actually on a disk. I'll just minimise this. Oh no, there it is, there. So the idea was that it talks to the small business, the things they need to get started, all about website design, creating websites, e-commerce, e-marketing, and it was basically case study driven. So a number of small businesses participated in video interviews and described their processes of actually getting online. So the idea of this was to create a sort of a non-threatening way of getting people engaged in some way on the internet. It wasn't meant to be a course, it was just meant to get them thinking about the things they need to think about before maybe deciding to do a course or employ a graphic designer or a web developer or something like that. It's very content rich in terms of the heaviness of the content because it's mostly video, a lot of video interviews that download, but they tend to download pretty well. We do have an offline version. We are thinking of how it might adapt to mobile. Okay, there's a lot of small text in it, so some of that would have to be rethought. So we'll just try and pick one up. And while it's coming, I'll just go to the offline one I've got, because I don't trust that it's actually going to come up that quickly. Here we go. Look, I've got one. Here's one I made earlier. Okay, this is just a version for CD-ROM that doesn't have Sakai. So this is the content that sits in Sakai, taken out of Sakai, so we can give it to someone on the CD for just moments like this. When the internet decides to be a bit slower. So we'll have a look at that first. Okay, as I said, there's various modules. We'll just pick one, like getting started. And the preloader comes up. This one won't be connected to the internet. And it's basically just in the form of a book, so that people can click on tabs and work their way through the book, or click on pages and work their way forwards or backwards. There are various interactives that they can engage in to find out what the different parts of the internet actually do and what some of the words like server and client actually mean. They can access the web from the Flash as well. And there are interviews, video interviews of people who've gone through this process, and some of them have done it, you know, themselves, some of them have spent a lot of money to do it, but they talk honestly about it.
What we always do is ask our clients if they've looked at our website, if they've, because the website has a lot of the information. If a client rings and hasn't seen the website and they ask for information about the processes that we have, so they want to design for their garden, What do you, you know, what's that process?
Embedded
do you
in
come
flash
and
fix, or so each double page spread is a separate
how much do you charge, all that sort of thing. So we will send them that information as a PDF.
But
we will also say to them, have you seen the website? It started off really as
so a whole lot of interviews, links, talking about, you know, how do you choose a web address, what your needs are, really getting them to think about why they want a website, what sort of image they want to project onto the web, and then looks at some of the case studies as well. Evaluation forms that they can submit, which won't because it's not on the net, and a glossary to all the relevant terms that have been covered in each particular one. So there were five of them, plus the case studies, which is just all the video interviews put into a completely separate book with links to all those separate videos. So each person that talks, they're asked questions like, do you have any incentives to make people come back to your website? How do you track the effectiveness of your website? All those sorts of things. So that's the commercial offering, if you like, the Small Biz online course, and that's up and running now, and the feedback's generally good. The advertising for it hasn't been that successful, so there, I think they're meant to be 1,200 on it. There's about 80, I think, at the moment, but it's still got another 7 months to run, so I think they'll sort of have quite a few people doing it. So, and by the way, as I go through this, if anyone has any questions, rather than save them up to the end, if you feel you want to ask them, but I suppose we've got the microphone. If it's a question you really must ask, you can do it. Okay, so that looks at a content management system like Sakai, or I guess Moodle. Not knowing Moodle, I can't really speak, but for me, something like Sakai isn't a learning, it's not an educational tool for me, it's a tracking management tool. Especially the way that the navigation was designed to present information to students, I found it impossible to use and impossible for students to learn with. So in a sense, we have to adapt the tools that are given to us to fit educational needs if we're trying to work as teachers rather than as people designing systems. So I really love Sakai now, but I found it very difficult because I was thinking of it as an educational tool, and it's not. When we talk about education, we're doing something that involves tools like mobile phones and Sakai and e-learning and a whiteboard and electronic whiteboards and stuff like that. We've got to be careful we don't obsess about those tools. And this was really pushed as an educational tool, and I don't actually agree with that. Okay, so that's the... and I can get back into Sakai now because we're not going to try and load stuff up. So so that's Sakai, and that's an example of a commercial course that's sitting up there now. Another course that I'm working on at the moment is using a very similar interface but a different approach. I'll just open it up in here. And it's still very much in development, so it's not actually finished. But it's an interface for people, and once again it's a book metaphor, it's a folder metaphor and a desktop metaphor. It's for people who are living in strata units or in the executive committees of strata units to teach them about the responsibilities of an executive committee. And it was felt that it should be very much in familiar sort of imagery like books and folders, and there's a notebook and a video thing for people's comfort. And it works very similarly to the online Small Biz in that it's got tabs, it's got pages that work from place to place, but all the content is actually pulled in from external XML. It's got little icons so you can...
Executive committee meetings are held whenever necessary. That's in the short answer.
You can do activities and link to them from within the manual. The manual is a central place for everything, so you can link to videos and activities and all different things from that. You can even bring up a notebook, and you can highlight bits of text and add notes that will eventually appear in the notebook that you can then email to yourself and print and stuff like that. You can access resources as PDFs and download them as well. So there are 6 modules in this. Each of them presented in pretty well the same way. A lot of this is still just draft content. But all of this text is completely external to the interface. Even these menu items and the colours because the colours didn't suit some people because they might be red-green colourblind, for example. So all of it's totally configurable by the teacher. So every word that you see, every colour, can be edited just in Dreamweaver or the text file. So they can take this package and they can totally repurpose it for whatever they want to use. So, for example, here's an example of the XML file. So, you know, module one, if I just drag that in. I mean, it's still pretty messy code, but it is able to be accessed, and that's the main thing, that it can be accessed and changed. And it wouldn't be too hard to make a nice user-friendly text editor to actually edit the colours and edit the content. So I'll just show you what it looks like a little bit. We will get to mobile. We will. Okay, so there's an example. So the first manual is called Course Overview. It's got a title, Welcome. Each section, there's various sections there. The purpose of this course, when we want to put a video up, we say video, title equals welcome video. That's where the file is, and that actual tag is responsible for that guide talking on that video. So that tag we just looked at is actually this tag, welcome video. When I click on that,
executive committee meeting.
That's the file that was actually specified. If I change the name of that file and if I change welcome video to Hello Fred, you'll see a different video there, and what you'll see here is Hello Fred instead of welcome video. So that idea of pulling apart a learning tool or a learning object, if you like, into smaller and smaller bits so that almost anyone can make changes to it. Okay, so getting back into Sakai. Okay, the student group that we took through this, did it without a mouse, digital media students at Northern Sydney Institute. We had two classes, one doing a subject called design interactions, another group doing a subject called design animation, design games. We combined them so that they all spent the whole day together once a week and went through a whole lot of different exercises together. So I'll just step down the different aspects of this course, and in it it'll start to bring out sort of things we need to think about when designing for mobile phone. Mouse, let's use this. So basically, let's wait for a second to load. If we look at the links down the left-hand side, well, we don't have to because it's come up, we talk about mobile phones in general, about the distribution systems and the platforms. We talk about this language called mobile processing. We talk about gaming because they're doing a subject called gaming. And what we did is get them to design a serious game, which is a game that has some purpose other than just to play a game. So it might be a game about the environment, it might be a game about health, it might be a game about how to drive a car, but in a game sort of way rather than just being presented with information. So the introduction, which I'll just sort of look at now, just talked about some of the philosophies and some of the things about mobile phones now being social connections and business connections, entertainment connections, internet connections and personal connections. This is from a Nokia seminar that a woman called Jennifer Wilson spoke at, who's really sort of very knowledgeable in this area and sort of right on the cutting edge. And basically it's so much more than a phone now, and that's why we're thinking of it as an educational tool. And then we started to talk about platforms. And this diagram's actually, you know, it's not that old, but it's probably quite a bit out of date. So thinking about screen sizes and phone behaviour and other functions such as phone calls coming at any time and the incompatibility of phone operating systems. So when this one came out, Symbian, which is the Nokia style, had about 44% of the international market. BlackBerry, Research in Motion, 19%. Apple was 15%, Android was 10%, and things like Windows Mobile and other were sort of down there. I'm not sure what the latest figures are, and I'm sure we could look it up quite easily, but these two boxes would be a lot bigger. And in the States, this red box pie would be bigger than this orange pie. But for this class, because we were on PCs and because you know we were just starting and most people in the class actually had Symbian phones, we decided to concentrate on Flash, because they were actually learning Flash anyway to make games, so it all fitted in quite beautifully. So that's the way we went. And then talked about this diagram where the different relationships between the hardware and the firmware and the operating systems on the phone. Very interesting thing again about the development life cycle for a mobile phone game, whereas some of the CD-ROM games or DVD games or PlayStation games might take one or more years to develop and cost $80 million, mobile phone games have about a 10-week development cycle from initial inception to actually distribution. So it's a very quick and dirty sort of industry. And then once again sort of talks about the distribution. I'll just jump down to mobile processing. We then taught them this Java-based language, which is free. We'll just download it and get people actually developing content. They need to learn a little bit of programming, but it's actually designed for artists to do artwork, so it's not really heavy programming. But I'm just waiting for it to load. And as I said, it's a subset of a language called processing. And they're both just front ends to the Java programming language that make it a lot easier to do the sort of things you want to do. So we gave them tasks like just put an image on the screen, make that image bounce around the screen, create an etch-a-sketch so that by pushing up, down, left and right on your joystick, you can move a little dot around the screen, press a button to erase it. The next phase would be shake the phone to erase it. So creating something that actually uses the infrastructure of the phone. So we gave them a whole series of exercises just to get them thinking about a different screen size, a different sort of platform, and to sort of getting into that. And these students who are doing, as I said, digital media, so they're using a little bit of interactivity, a little bit of scripting with ActionScript in Flash. So they're sort of familiar with the concepts, some more than others. Then we gave a bit of a background into... Oh, there we are. It's up now. I've just left it. We gave them a bit of background into gaming. Got them to think about the different types of games. It might be on a computer or a console or a phone, and how they might sort of adapt something to actually use on a phone. And then we went through some of the processes of repurposing stuff into Flash Lite. And this is really sad that it's not coming up. But we'll talk about it. So we talked about the things that the students would need to do to have an animation in a computer and then create it so that it would work suitably on a mobile phone. We then got them to do some design exercises. And I'm going to show you some video in a second of that. And luckily I've got that on my disk. And the design exercises started with a couple of ideas. We said, look, we want you to design a game that's a space shooter game, like Space Invaders. You've got a rock down the bottom and there's things up there and you've got to shoot them. And then we want you to design a game that will introduce new students to the college so that they can find their way around. And this is for a PC. So they got into groups, they did some workshopping and brainstorming and came back and they did all these diagrams and showed us what they'd come up with. Then we said, okay, design exactly the same games for a Nokia-style phone with a joystick. So then they had to rethink about the way they were doing it. Suddenly they had a portable device, might have GPS, might have accelerometers, got buttons. So they went away and then they came back and showed us the results of that. Then, do exactly the same again for a device like an iPhone that has no physical buttons, but it's got all these neat little features and you can multi-touch and stuff like that. Then they came back and we said, okay, final, do it exactly the same again, but this time you've got a phone with no physical controls at all. All it's got is things like that and that and that. Maybe you can blow into it. So then they had to think about that as well. And this was as part of a wider exercise where we were getting them to design the concept for an application for maybe an iPhone or a phone involved in council planning. And the idea was that if someone goes to a park, they could get a notification on their phone that tells them that the council's planning to build a swimming pool in the park. Do they have a comment? If they have a comment, they can make a comment then and there on their phone. They can actually go to the website and look at the plans. They can actually walk around the park and say, I think it should go here, or I think it should go here. And then they can look at other people's decisions on where they think the pool or basketball court or toilet block should go or fountain, and they can say, well, I don't vote for that, but I vote for this. And over time, you're consulting the community and building up a huge wealth of data just by people being in the park, not by people having to go home and write a letter and send it into the council. So that was the... Oh, there you go. That was the questions of that. Just see if the internet comes back. So I'll show you those videos because while it's coming up.
The intro as the take logo, and then this pop-up screen will come up to log in.
First of all, you select your area.
Yep.
You click on the comment field, up comes keyboard, enter what you want.
Initial redesign of the didn't actually run this with the students, but we will next time, and we created a very basic flash interactive, or an animatic if you like, just using those paper prototypes. So I'll just quickly show you. So here's one example where their work was, just the paper was just scanned in, and some basic interaction was put over it just to get a feel for how the thing might work when they were using it. So interestingly, although they were designing for Nokia type phones, it was all done in an iPhone form factor, the size and shape of an iPhone and the sort of buttons that an iPhone might use. So just looking at the voting system, they might have in something like this. And certainly next time we'd use this as another sort of tool that the students can use to just familiarise themselves with Flash as well, because that's one of the products that they're learning. And then eventually we ended up coming up with a prototype screen design, interface design, and we just sort of had a bit of a play with that, and I'll just show you that. Internet anymore because it's not anyway. So it was just a matter of designing it to fit on the mobile phone size screen, and because the publish settings of this were set to be a particular version of Flash, which is called Flash Lite 3, it means that when I actually go to compile this, or when I go to publish this, it will actually start up something called Adobe Device Central, which if you've got the Adobe suite with the Flash and the Photoshop and the Dreamweaver and that, you'll have Adobe Device Central as well. And this is a product that has templates of all, or looks online for templates of all known mobile phones, and allows you to try and incorporate your content into them. So here we've got a sample version of my phone, and I can actually use this as if I'm using the phone. And the beauty of this is that you can actually emulate various conditions. You can emulate reflections on the phone, indoor and outdoor and sunshine, just to see if the design that you're coming up with is actually going to be a problem to use outside. You know, it's not necessarily exactly accurate, but it certainly gives you an idea of what might be bad colours to choose. Change the contrast. A lot of these things can be set, like setting to full screen can be set automatically in ActionScript. You can record use of it and then give it to focus groups to try out. And then you can change things like the status of the device, simulate and calibrate the device, simulate a network that's clogged up or having problems, and play with a lot of that sort of stuff as well. And there's profiles for a whole lot of different types of, sorry, I'm just using the touch thing at the moment, devices. And for each device profile, it's possible to find out all the different functions that phone supports and what you could actually access with Flash. Things like getting the phone to vibrate, or maybe accessing GPS or some of those other things. Any questions at this point? Okay, so what I might do, I've got some So that's basically talking about the sort of that exercise in that phone technologies class. And the final thing that we did with them was, unfortunately in Sakai, it was the gaming part. And we said, okay, we're going to develop a rocket flying game that shoots things at the planet. We always like shooting games. And we're going to get it working, and then eventually we're going to put it on a mobile phone and just see some of the issues that we need to think about when we're putting it on a mobile phone. So I might have to actually just do this here rather than doing it there. So I'll talk about some of the issues involved in putting onto Flash, onto the phone from Flash. So I'm going to start with this file, which I made over breakfast for my son because he loves balls. And the idea was that while he was having his Weet-Bix, he could watch these balls bouncing. He's only 18 months old, so get giggy bugger. I thought, okay, this might be an exercise. If we wanted to make a screensaver that we put on the mobile phone, how would we do it, given that Flash is an animation program and all this is just some balls being animated up and down? So really, one thing we should do is actually design the screen size and just work out exactly what sort of target screen size we're going for. But if we don't, and if we're lazy, Flash will do its best to try and accommodate that. I'll say at the outset that most of the industry says, look, Flash is really slow on mobile phones, consumes a lot of battery on mobile phones, and there are some of those issues. But it really depends on the sort of content you're looking at and how rapidly you want to develop it. And if you're dealing with students and you want to do something quickly and you want to do something that's fun, I think it's a great way to do it, even if they just use it on a fake phone on the screen of the computer. So for this example, all I'm going to do is change the published settings of this movie, and instead of targeting Flash Player 10, I'm going to target Flash Lite. And there's various versions of Flash Lite. I'll just target Flash Lite 3. That's all I'm going to do. And I'm going to do it. And you'll notice when I do that this time, rather than just run, it's firing up Adobe Device Central. And it'll bring up that, and it's already on the phone. So I can play with that. And if I had Bluetooth on here and on my phone, this has generated an SWF file that's sitting on my computer. I Bluetooth it to my phone. On my phone, it just comes in as an SMS, and I can play it straight away, or I can find it on the phone and then play it. It's that easy.
But it wouldn't work on an iPhone.
Right. As this stands now, the question was, it wouldn't work on an iPhone. If I put this onto an Android with Flash Lite, it would work. If I put it onto a Nokia or Symbian phone that has Flash Lite built in, it would work. iPhones have all the Flash technology built into the chip that's inside the phone, but because of the legal issues and wars between Apple and Adobe, the iPhone won't play Flash content. However, Adobe, at the beginning of the year, came up with something called the Packager, which would take a CS5, which is the next version of Flash from this product, and you could say, put it through the packager, I want an iPhone version, and it would make an iPhone version that runs in native code on the iPhone. Apple responded by saying, any application on the iPhone must run in a language that was originally written in Objective-C, not in any other language that was translated. So there was a legal requirement that the end product had to have originated in something other than Adobe Flash. They've now reversed that, which means that you can now take content in Flash, run it through the packager, and I haven't actually tried it, I don't know how successful it is. Adobe claims it's very successful, I'm not sure. CS5 is well out now, so we can try it, and it will run on the iPhone. Now, they may or may not accept it on iTunes, but there's no reason you can't put it on students' iPhones and actually get it working. Just quickly, the other... I might have said this one. The rocket that we actually got the students to make, I've got that here. And it was just a standard sort of shoot 'em up, fly a rocket around. It's hiding somewhere. There it is. Destroy the planet, resets and starts again. So the idea was that they had to, we sort of turned that into something that could run on the mobile phone. And once again, to do that, it was a very similar process. The only things we really had to change was we just moved some things around a bit, changed the size of a few things, and modified the screen size, and I'm not sure what that's not saying. And then change the publish settings.
there were a few other things we did, like tell it to vibrate when the things hit the planet. The other thing that we needed to change, the right and left arrows sort of translated nicely into these. We were using the space bar to fire, and that's not working here, so I had to tell it to use the return key instead, and then it would work. Same sort of thing, still fly it around. And in flashlight, all these buttons are accessible and interactive, and you can make use of them. So that when you put it on the phone, it works exactly as it should.
Yes, my name's Maria Ames. I'm from Western Australia. Yes. I'm interested in what you were saying about getting it from here to the Nokia. I understand that. Send it, comes in via an SMS message. But when you translate it such that you can take it to the iPhone, number one, you can't Bluetooth with iPhone, so you can't do that. Can't go on iTunes. So how does it get there?
Okay. I'm not sure the exact legal steps, but you have to become for $99 a year, you can become a developer in inverted commas, or your institution can actually do it for free, I think. And that allows you to load onto up to 100 iPhones. That gives you the capability of plugging the iPhone in by the USB and actually storing it on the phone. It gives you a license code that you type in which allows that to happen. It's all just legal stuff. It's not technical stuff. So yeah, you can do it. And as a private person, it's $99 a year. And as an institution, I think it's free as an educational institution. So you can play this game on the iPhone. The sort of games the students were coming up with, and I'll just sort of show them, not necessarily on the phone, I'll just show them. These are the serious games that they were coming up with. Here's mobile version, and because I'm not playing it in Flash, we'll only see the size, we won't actually see it playing in my sort of little fake Nokia phone. So there were just some minor issues that had to be changed. I think the sound's triggering twice as well, but basically, sort of up and running. This one called Dead on Time. Basically a driving game that you've got to try and find your way to the hospital without sort of running into cars and things. So it's teaching them about interaction and interactivity and screen design. Here's one about bullying, school bullying, which was some... One's about Australian native animals versus feral animals, and it's a so they really get into it, and being able to get it onto the phone really sort of adds to the experience for them, I think. So what I'm going to do is to just get back into here and start this again, and yes, please.
Hi, I'm Emily from North Coast Institute. With the device central, is that a testing thing, or does it actually change things for you?
No, it's just testing. So you do all your changes in Flash, you put it on there, and you can click a full screen button and see how it looks.
Uh-huh.
Then in Flash, you can actually program in ActionScript, make it go full screen, make it vibrate, all this sort of stuff.
Okay.
So it's just what's called an emulator.
Yeah.
What it does have, and unfortunately in debt, we can't actually, well, certainly not as in the Institute, it looks on the internet, gets all the profiles for the phones. But if you're in debt, it locks and won't because you're behind a firewall. But you can download them at home and then bring them in. And it's got a picture of the Nokia, a picture of a HTC phone, a picture of Casio or Ericsson, Sony Ericsson phones and that. And it has the functionality of those phones and also any speed and configuration issues. It emulates that as closely as possible. And they've also, I believe, got an online testing system where you can actually go online and it'll get tested on the actual device and get a bit of some feedback.
Okay, and just another question. With the new legal requirements for the iPhone and being able to use Flash Lite, does that mean you don't have to go through the Apple Developer Kit to produce content for Apple iPhone?
Not to produce the content, but to get it onto the phone, you've got to have that license number. You've got to know someone with the license number. And then that license number will allow you to load onto, I think it's up to 100 phones.
But you can use Flash now to
create
that
content.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay.
So, I mean, I haven't explored that properly. I'm just going on all the stuff that I've read and what other people have tried and told me. It looks to me like Flash might be a create once published anywhere
system.
That's not, it's very just sort of simple stuff. Okay. And some of the new phones have routines that can be accessed by Flash for things called platform services on Nokia. So you can access the accelerometers and you can access the GPS and the camera and the recorder so that while people are out using your Flash product, they can be interacting in those ways and over the internet and stuff like that too. So I'll finish with a few quotes, I think. Someone called Tutorial, I've already said, says learning is an intrinsically mobile activity. And a guy called Kevin Walker says mobile learning is not something that people do, learning is what people do. And I'd like us to all think about that in terms of e-learning, in terms of mobile learning, in terms of any sort of whizzy, fantastic technology. It's all about learning, it's not about the particular devices. So we may have some mobile learning, we may have some hard copy learning, we may have some sort of blended learning, and it's all sort of thrown in together. And I think that's... Oh, no, there's one more. Not only can you learn anywhere, anytime, but as a teacher, you can work everywhere, all the time. That's a quote from me. Okay, thank you. So if there's any more questions...
We have 5 minutes, so are there any more questions for David?
I just have an overarching question of the future of Flash, given Apple's attitude to it that seems to just be blocking it all the time. Is that the future of animation over the web and on mobile devices?
I'd never go for one particular package at all. I mean, throwing all your eggs in the Flash basket is probably, what happened to Netscape, and I'd really sort of be as broad as possible and look at the other ways of doing things. And now when you buy applications that are available on Nokia and Android and iPhone, someone has actually done it three times. They've done it for the Nokia and they've done it. And you almost have to still think in those ways. In a sense, if you're designing for the web, and you're not using plugins like Flash, then you've possibly got the broadest scope because all phones are going to be able to access the web. And Nokia is really pushing this web runtime widget thing at the moment, which are things that run in the browser. So, I mean, that may be a way to go, or maybe Apple will change its mind. I don't know, there's Silverlight from Microsoft, I don't know what's happened to that. That was going to be the alternative. There's HTML5, which now lets you put video tags into your web pages and show streaming video. So, it's fun at the moment. I used to be a fan of Macromedia Director, and everything I did was in Director, and I couldn't believe that Director would ever not be the only authoring program, and now it's not. So, yeah. Does that answer? But the techniques, get to know techniques, I think. That's why I tell the students, don't learn how to program in Flash, don't learn how to program JavaScript, learn the techniques, and then you can do with programming anything.
Any other questions for David? Any other comments about any of the... Okay, well, thank you very much, David. That was a very interesting presentation about what's possible and what he's doing with his students. And I'll be looking out for their games up there on iTunes in the future.
I'm hoping they send some money to the teachers.
So if we could just thank you. David.